We are joined on Quicksland this morning today by the Executive Director of Randolph County Developmental Disability Services, Georgia McNamara. How are you doing this morning, young lady?
Great. It's great to see you again.
All right. You recognize these two gentlemen? Kind of have to have you sneak up a little bit closer to the microphone. You recognize these two gentlemen sitting across the table from you?
Well, usually I see them in the rearview mirror, so, you know.
Police Chief Troy Link, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you this morning?
Wonderful. Sheriff Mark Nichols, good to see you.
Good to see you, too, Bob.
All right. Georgia, what are we here to talk about? Because this is kind of a neat program, isn't it?
Well, Randolph County Developmental Disability Services is participating with quite a lot of other community service agencies. Thank you. To perform some CIT training, and I am certainly not the expert on that. I am actually a latecomer to the whole process, but we thought the community might be interested in hearing more about what we're doing to help people who have disabilities interact with law enforcement.
All right. Hey, by the way, we want to put in a plug. There was an event over the weekend, wasn't there? A really neat one that was very successful.
There was. I guess it was last month, Nikki Sonker came on the show with me to talk about the 5K that they were having in the park, and that occurred over the weekend. I actually was out of town. I had bought tickets to something else long before I knew about that, but I hear that it was very successful.
All right, and Chief, you were saying you know a lot of folks were out there, weren't they?
Yeah, I talked with Nikki's dad the Monday after that. He came up to me and I got to work, thanked the Officer Swan for being out there and participating in that, and he said that they had over 200 registered for it, and they had over 100 that actually got out and did the run-walk despite the temperatures that morning. He said several people came in and said, we just can't do the cold. But they came in and got their shirts, so they had good support for it. He was very pleased.
Well, Sheriff Nichols, were you the one who ordered the weather for Saturday or for that event?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm looking forward to spring, and it's not listening.
So you didn't order the 30 degrees and the 30-mile-an-hour winds or anything like that, did you?
No.
I can tell you that Unfinished Pieces was able to make a donation to ICANN Missouri Foundation right after the 5K. That's what they raised some money for, to send some of the children to a day camp that ICANN puts on every summer for children who have disabilities. And they will be here in June on the radio show with me to talk about that day camp.
All right. Now, who wants to start off and explain what CIT is all about?
Well, I can, Bob. CIT is a crisis intervention team. And just a little bit of history in Randolph County with this. When former police chief Dennis Cupp was in the position, he and I discussed getting a CIT team together. However, the training at that time was in Kentucky. And it was going to be difficult for both agencies to send personnel to that far for a five-day training. As it progressed,
and they'd also come back talking funny, wouldn't they?
Well, they possibly could. Anyway, the training continued to work its way west and eventually made it into Missouri, and now we've been able to get a council in Randolph County to put the training on so we can train our own officers. It's a five-day class and a lot of very good training.
All right, so what all goes into this? What's it all about?
Well, essentially what CIT is there to do, it's let's see if I can read my notes here. The purpose of it is to redirect that event when the police usually get called at the start of these things. So by default, because law enforcement responds to disturbances or fights or whatever may be going on, we're usually the front line that sees the mental health crisis at the when it's going on. So the purpose of CIT was to give us a method to de-escalate those things down and then recognize that there is a mental health crisis going on, not get involved in a physical confrontation with them if it could any way be avoided, but also give us resources to send that person to receive the mental health services that they may be needing. So all those things are designed to redirect that person out of the criminal justice system and into the mental health system where they can get the assistance and help that they need.
So, Georgia, this information has got to be very valuable, isn't it? More information, the better.
Oh, absolutely. I think that when a law enforcement officer arrives on the scene and something's going on and they don't know that the person has a mental illness or autism, or our folks who have autism can sometimes get really, really, really frustrated and very overwhelmed. And it's confusing to somebody who doesn't know that that's what they're dealing with, and can be perceived as very threatening, not just to the other people in the situation, but also to the law enforcement or the fire department or whoever the first responder is. So this is a way to train first responders to recognize some of the symptoms of people that they're just meeting for the very first time. And I think it can increase the officer's safety and the safety of the individuals that we support. So anything we can do to make people safer is a good deal.
Sheriff, how valuable is it? The more information you have leading up to a scene before you get there, the better off everything's going to be.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. If you can pick up the signs, possible symptoms, you know how to handle it better. You know what not to say, or how to, as the chief said, how to de-escalate something. And it's safer both for the individual that you're dealing with as well as the officer.
Yeah, chief, and you've been at this a long time, too. It's scary when you arrive up at a scene and you have no idea what you may be confronted with, isn't it?
Well, every scene's that way. Every car stop, every call for service, dog at large calls, it doesn't matter. What the initial call is as it comes into us may not be exactly what the officers find when they get there, or it could escalate into something completely different after they do get there. So the CIT training, I mean, officers are usually pretty good about recognizing when something is not right, but we're not there to diagnose, we're not there to treat. That is for somebody else to do. But usually officers are really good at recognizing that something is going on, something is not right. Our problem has always been is we really had very limited resources available to us, both in training and places to direct or send those individuals. So the CIT training comes in, and it provides training so the officers can recognize what the likely mental health crisis is going on. And also provides them de-escalation techniques and tactics to bring that situation down so you have a meaningful, respectful relationship or conversation with that individual. We don't want to escalate those up to the point where now we're in a physical confrontation with them. We don't want them to, we don't want to be the cause of things escalating out of control and thus resulting in a use of force situation for us. That's when you have unfortunate things take place. You know, it's whether it be they're having suicidal tendencies, whether or not they're just angry or whatever is going on, we have a much better relationship with them if we can de-escalate those things down, build a level of trust, and have some place to go with them. It doesn't help the individual for us to calm the situation down and leave but not give them resources, or for us to have resources to contact somebody and say, hey, you need to go talk to Joe. Joe had a bad night last night, this and this and this happened. So that's the real value behind the CIT training.
All right, can you pass along this example? I know when we were talking about the Autism Awareness Day, you kind of mentioned that if an officer makes, say, a traffic stop and asks, can I see your license? I think that's a great example of this.
So with individuals that are on affected by autism, and autism runs in, let's say it's on a spectrum. So you have high-functioning individuals with autism all the way down to low-functioning. One of the things with autistic people is that, and this is the advice was given to us when we had autism training at the station, was that if you ask a person with autism, may I see your driver's license, they may tell you no. Now, because they don't perceive that request as that's not a request, I need to see your driver's license. So that can create communication issues, can create friction right out the gate. And the folks with autism just interact with the public different than everybody else at times. So that is one thing. So, you know, would you please sit down? No, I don't want to sit down. Well, it wasn't a request. It was, you need to sit down. So that's what. So having the autism awareness, having some of those things so we have a better understanding of how an individual with autism views the world, how they interact with people, how they interact with emergency services is very important to have a meaningful, respectful conversation with them and a positive outcome.
So, Georgia, how can you help out? Can you help continue to provide information for law enforcement and first responders, too?
Well, we've had a really good relationship with both the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department. They have both sent people to activities that we do to interact with the families and the individuals that we support. Several times police officers have come out to do presentations at ICANN and to talk to the people in our day program to make sure that they understand that police officers are their friend and are trying to help. So that's one way that we've partnered with them in the past, and then going forward in CIT would just be continued training. we have looked at, and I haven't talked to Chief Link to see what he's already done, because like I said, I'm new to the CIT process, but we have looked at the identification cards that you can get. There are people who are deaf and hard of hearing who have a card that they can present. People who have autism have a card that they can present to an officer. The problem with autism, which is something that we seem to be focusing a lot on lately, is that when lights and sirens are going on, a lot of the folks who have autism have sensory issues, so they become very upset by lights and sirens, and they might not think to show a card, which is why we think the registry is a really good idea.
All right. Go ahead.
Directory. I'm sorry, directory.
We're not registering anybody. we're doing a directory.
Yeah.
All right. Sheriff, again, this information is obviously valuable. When's the CIT training going to be taking place?
Next week.
Thursday and Friday next week, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yes, of the following week. So we've got 5 days in a row.
So Bob, you two have to put up with each other for 5 days in a row?
No, he's not going to be here.
Yeah, I'll be out of town, and so Troy gets to handle it.
All right. So who's all going to be going through the training?
Right now, we've got 25 registered to attend, and that was the class size maximum. I've got four officers going. I think Sheriff Nichols has got three or four. We've got officers from LaGrange, from Brunswick, Salisbury. We have a big group, like four or five from probation and parole that are signed up. We've got a couple of other ones. We have at least one from a church, but I don't remember which one it was. And then your guys' chaplain, Daryl Hansen is signed up to go. So we've got a pretty diverse group that's going to be going through it. It is heavy to the officer side, which is what CIT was designed to be for. That's the first responders. That's the front line. Those are the people that you want to have the de-escalation techniques and tactics. It's a process. I know the Sheriff's Department has, they're ahead of us as far as the number of officers that they have already gone through CIT. We're just now getting started on it. And we've been working on this CIT. I've been involved in it since late 2015 when MRMC kind of became the agency or the people that wanted to pull this together. So we've been working on this since late 15, early 16, when I came back from the academy is when I really got involved in it, and we established our council. So this is our first training. It's a culmination of the last couple of years of work to get this thing done and make it happen. So we hope to become an established council with the Missouri State Council and then at least be able to give this training at least annually. So we'll just have to see how it works. I think if we get a successful one underneath our belt, then it'll make it that much easier, especially for the surrounding smaller agencies to be able to send people to it. One of the problems with mental health facilities or mental health treatment is A, nationwide, there's been a reduction of available beds, available places for that to go, for people to go to receive treatment. That is only amplified and made worse when you get into rural Missouri. There is simply not that much available for people to go receive mental health services. And conversely, there's not that much for rural Missouri law enforcement to actually get a chance to go to this type of training.
So where's the training going to be and who's going to be conducting it?
The training is going to be held at Timberlake Christian Church down on Gratz Brown. And the CIT Council from the state actually, they've put out a itinerary of training that says this has to happen. And then between everybody involved in it, we've got instructors for all of the blocks of training that's required from the state CIT. I know Jerry Romo is in. I think Darren Ivey from Kansas City is in. There's a lot of mental health professionals that are providing training for different blocks. It's a very diverse, it's a shotgun pattern effect. We're hitting, these guys are getting training in a whole bunch of areas and a whole bunch of exposure in recognizing in this and that. And then they have to go through practical exercises where they go through scenario-based training at the end of it. So they actually, at the end of the week, get to practice what they've been training on all week.
So, Mark, this is a big commitment from law enforcement throughout the area to be involved in this, isn't it?
Absolutely. Any time that you send a what we would consider a large number of people to the training for the 5-day period, you know, that's officers that are not on the street, and you have to backfill there. So it is a commitment, a large commitment from both departments, and also just the time to put it together.
Now, you've been involved as sheriff for how long now?
Well, since Dennis Cupp was chief of police, and that was back in 2005, we actually tried getting this developed, but and getting training for the officers. But again, it was out of state and just very inconvenient.
But how long have you been a law enforcement officer now?
I've been a licensed law enforcement officer for 32 years.
Okay, so are you seeing more and more contacts with people who may have some challenges like these?
Absolutely. You know, almost on a daily basis, you will come in contact with somebody that is developmentally disabled. And this is just something else that's in the tool belt that we can use to work with.
So, Georgie, how exciting is it to have this kind of commitment from law enforcement to get this kind of training?
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. It shows that the law enforcement officers in our county are very cooperative. They understand that people that have developmental disabilities or mental illness or any other type of disability, actually, that they bring something more to the situation than meets the eye. And that, you know, 20 years ago, nobody understood that or recognized that. And now I'm just really proud that our community does.
Chief, you've been at this game for how long now? Because I've seen some old pictures of you on your Facebook page.
Yeah, I need to thank Travis Mitchell for that. That's when I was young and, you know, everything was good. 26 years. So I've been with Moberly 26 years. Of course, I was raised in Huntsville, so this is all home ground for me. And Sheriff Nichols is right. I don't know that if we actually see that much more of it, or that we just know that there's much more of it because we're better educated as to recognize those things. You know, it's one of those things that is in our society, it's in our population, and because of the mental health issues that so many of the people have, when they have bad days, they don't take their medication, law enforcement is the first it's called. Whether that mental health crisis is a result of physiological things because they have it diagnosed for one thing, or they have ingested things that causes the mental health crisis. Either way, we get called. We're rolling on these type of calls daily, and I don't know what the percentage of our calls actually involve this, but I would say a pretty safe bet would be 30-40% of our calls there's a mental health component in there someplace. And as I said, we don't diagnose. We're just recognizing that there's a mental health issue there someplace, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's more diagnosable things like paranoid schizophrenia or bipolarism. There's such a wide range of things that people are affected with. The autism is just another one of those things. And with the autism directory, the whole goal behind that was for us to have a mechanism and a procedure in place where we could get information or have information available to our officers so that when they went out and they were in contact with somebody, as Georgie said, many of them have what they call light sensitivities or noise sensitivities. Any of that information our officers can get beforehand, before they actually make contact, makes things so much easier. The officers are informed. They know that they're going into this, and they have a mechanism in place where they can go get information and very specific information on that particular individual. And that's where we can approach things differently. We know a person has autism. We know they have light sensitivities. We know that they're non-communicative. That's all information that makes that contact for both parties a much more meaningful and positive contact.
All right. So, Sheriff, again, hit the dates. When's this going to take place and who? And go again over some of the folks who are going to be there, if you would.
Well, it will be again, next Thursday, Friday, and then the following Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
And also, he's talking about the Autism Awareness Day, too, which is coming up at the end of the month.
Absolutely. That's on April the 28th. It's at Brangus Pavilion, Rothwell Park. It starts at 1 o'clock, goes until 4 o'clock. And, Bob, I have to commend Chief Link and his staff for developing this autism directory. They've put a lot of work into it, a lot of thought. And this is something that will benefit all law enforcement officers as well as first responders around the county or even beyond. So I have to commend them for the hard work that they've done and you know, being out front and getting this put into place.
So, Georgie, how valuable a day is that going to be, do you think?
Oh, it's going to be wonderful. I'll be there, so come on out.
There's good reason to be there anyway.
I'm sure everybody who's listening would like to meet me in person, so come on out to Rothwell Park on April 28th between 1 and 4. And we will be there to have information. Some folks might suspect that a family member may have autism. People are becoming way more aware than they used to be. So the information that I'll have is how do you qualify for services? How do you get your foot through the door to start getting some help for that situation? And there's going to be a lot of other mental health providers out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who else is going to be there, Chief?
There's a whole slew of local mental health providers, I think.
Burrell.
We didn't know if the Thompson Center was going to be there or not. That they was kind of looking at dates. Like, we've got commitments from all area law enforcement.
You're going to let the fire department out there?
Yeah, we're going to put them in the back. Way in the back, like behind a curtain and stuff.
That's after you guys cheated on the last blood drive, right?
Yeah, that's what they say. We talked about having air evac there, but we was concerned about the helicopter landing and taking off, creating a problem for some of those with autism. So we've kind of, I think air evac is going to be there. They just won't have the helicopter there. And the whole goal behind it is to give those with autism, adults or parents that have autistic kids, a chance to interact with law enforcement, interact with fire department, and actually have they call it a secure environment for which they can have those interactions. So in the event of an accident, when we do have lights and sirens or something like that going on, they've at least had a positive interaction that was safe, it was secure, and hopefully that will reduce some of the anxiety that they may have as a result if they're involved in an emergency or an accident or something like that.
All right. Again, this is open to anyone, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
All right. Hey, gentlemen. And Georgie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. More of Quicksland this morning coming up in just a moment.